Blog Talk Radio. Balasuayo!
To the very foundation of my understanding, my teaching, my walk, and my
my work along this divine, all-blessed life path and journey. It is how I, Divine Prince, make sense out of all that we are challenged with here in our daily existence on Mother, Father, Earth. And it is my personal place of power and understanding. The place where I begin, the place where I realize and crystallize, materialize all my endeavors, understanding that I and I alone create and co-create my divine destiny, and I alone create and co-create my divine, all-blessed reality. And so it is. Ashe. Today is Ifa, Wednesday, October 17th, 2012. I believe both are Ifa. And indeed, we are always truly honored to have you here with us in this sacred squared circle of gods and goddesses. Those of you under the sound of my voice now who understand spirit, who embrace spirit, we welcome you. Those of you who are still on the journey towards spirit, we welcome you also. And we offer a space for understanding, learning, awareness, and participation here on the Power Lunch at 12 noon, every day at 12 noon on Hoodoo, New Orleans, Voodoo Secrets and Recipes, but always here also on Wednesdays, Ifa Wednesday. Our live listening and call-in number is area code 347-215-8967. When you are ready with your question, comment, or request, please do press the number one on your telephone keypad, and we will be more than happy to assist you moving forward. My very special co-host, Baba Obafemi Orogunwa, is present here with us today on Ifa Wednesdays, and we send our support and our love to Baba Ojolola Ifa Sakir, who is still away, but it's with us in spirit. We will be forward with Ifa Wednesdays, and my co-host, Obafemi Orogunwa, momentarily, remembering that all is truly and indeed a blessing. Ashe. Give thanks, for indeed all is truly a blessing. Today is one of those days, as often happens for us, Baba and myself, that the spirit sort of takes over. And when you're operating in spirit, you can plan, and planning is good, and scheduling is good, and having things sort of in order is necessary. But then we also have to still have room enough to embrace spirit. I know for me personally, growing up in the sanctified church, as it was called back then, the apostolic Pentecostal doctrines, we had an order to how things were done. There was a sequence of how things were done. But the one thing that stood out for me and for that particular path of spirituality that is different from other quote-unquote black spiritual paths or religious Christian paths is the reliance on and the inviting in of spirit. So for me, at a very young age, I grew adapted to expecting spirit to be present, not just in religious context, not just in the spiritual sacred space, but even in the so-called routine and everyday events in our lives. And I think in some ways that has now morphed into the prosperity ministry, but in a very unhealthy sort of way, where our only focus is on spirit's ability to produce material things. And we overlook our need for, as well as our independence with, as we're going to get into much deeper into the show, on our spirit and our connection to spirit. And that's called different things, that's described in different ways based on your religion and your path. I think in Ifa and in Yoruba culture, that can often be condensed into Ori. And we started a conversation on Facebook earlier this morning. We've been ongoing talking about Ori. But I think the both of us, Baba and I, reposted some things that we had already discussed and shared about Ori, and it sort of refueled that conversation. For those who are new to the traditions and unfamiliar, Ori is a metaphysical concept important to Ifa, Lokomi, Santeria, Yoruba spirituality, if you will. And it is also a way of life. It's not just something that we honor, show reverence for, recognize, but we also incorporate it. It becomes a crucial part of your life, your path, and even your worship, if you will, with the traditions. And Ori literally means head and refers to one's spiritual intuition and destiny. It is the reflective spark of human consciousness embedded into the human essence, and therefore is personified as an Orisha in its own right. And I've heard experts, for lack of better words, in the traditions talk about, even my godparents talk about, the importance of Ori. And often in doing so, they give a ranking. And almost always, Ori is ranked just above Orisha in terms of our independence on it and the role that Ori plays in the lives of the devotees of Ifa. In Yoruba, Ori has really many references, meaning it's a sort of a weird English word. But it refers to the head, to the apex, to the highest pinnacle of something, of achievement or group. In a spiritual sense, the head as the highest point of the human body represents Ori. Symbolically, metaphorically, literally in terms of how we look at the brain even and consciousness. The head of a company or organization in Yoruba is known as Olori, or Ori for short. The supreme being, our single god, Olodumare, Olodumare, has Ori as the root word. In the human body, Ori has two roles. The physical, we can, you know, easily reference the brain, and the spiritual. The physical functions of Ori, you know, how we think, our eyes see, our senses, our nose, our ears, how our brain interacts with the rest of our body, if you will. Our spiritual Ori, however, is divided into parts. Apari Inu and Ori Apare. Apari Inu represents character, and Ori Apare represents destiny. So those destiny and character, those two things work together to make up, in a more simplified understanding, what Ori is and how Ori works for us. So we're going to talk about Ori a little bit more today. Of course, we will take your questions, comments, and requests there, 347-215-8967. Do press the number 1 on your telephone keypad when you are ready with your question, comment, or request. And I think, too, Baba, your mic is open, by the way. It flows right back into mental health and Orisha lifestyles as well. I know within my house, my practice, my Ile, that's one of the very first things that I look at in terms of anything having to do with the emotions, stresses, the thought processes of something. Just bringing clarity to anything. I was sharing with a relative within the traditions, if you will, about that also within the last few days, and how we have come across houses and paths where Ori is not taught and is not presented. We think with the level of importance that it is given on the continent, but also within the traditions, but also within any clear understanding of what we need as individuals to move forward in our spiritual journey. So I'm going to bring you now into the conversation, allow you to introduce yourself as always to our listening audience, but also allow you some time to build your position on the topic as we discuss Ori in a little bit more in detail today.
Ashe, Aboru, Aboshishe. It is indeed a fantastically blessed day. Today is the Itadogun, the 16-day prayer cycle for all Ifa priests and devotees, and so I greet everyone on this magnificent day of introspection and inner growth and divine guidance from our Father Oromila Elerikin, the witness of fate. I beg that the wisdom of Oromila will illuminate us from the inside out and allow us to match our own inner frequency with the frequency of timeless creation, and make one significant step forward in our own becoming our true selves, the selves that we chose in heaven in the time before time. I say, may it be so. The subject of Ori is definitely of the highest level of importance. there is a one verse, because it is Ifade, and I'll kind of start with the significance of Uri and this interplay between Uri and Ifa and the other divinities, because logically, for our minds, we hear Uri being number one, Uri being the top, Uri being the head of all, and we say, well, what's the point of doing anything else if there's Uri? And, you know, it's a kind of a carryover from the not just monotheistic, but singular, single-mindedness, let me put it that way, the single-mindedness of Western culture that says that if there's one God, then there are no other supporters of God. If there's one teacher, one husband, one wife, you know, you only can focus on one thing, and everything else becomes made obsolete at that moment. And Ifa doesn't teach us that way. You know, there is a unified focus and a unified formation of all influences, but like there is a single ocean and all waters flow into it, so is the consciousness of Olodumare in each of our destinies. We need all the different influences. And so in that, there's a story of Ifa that tells us about Enya. Enya, we can't understand Uri without understanding Enya. Enya is what is called human being. Enya literally means the chosen ones. The chosen ones, Enya. And Enya, human being, was in the heavenly realm and chose the highest blessings and came to the world and manifested those blessings. And neglected, forgot, decided not to pay homage to the divinities. And Enion was going about making great things happen, and the divinities were watching and waiting until finally they said, you know, we got to pull the plug on this, because Enion is not going to make sacrifice. Enion is refusing to, you know, give respect where respect is due. And so the Irumale, the divinities, they sent Uri. They said, Uri, you go and you bring Enion back to heaven, which would mean that person's life would end. And so Uri descended and found Enya in the house and grabbed Enya by the feet and started to drag Enya past the houses of all the divinities one by one. They passed the house of Ogun Lakaye. And Enya cried out, Ogun, bear me, Ogun, save me. Ogun rushed out of the house quickly and saw Uri dragging Enya by the feet and said, Uri, what are you doing? Why are you dragging Enion that way? And Uri said, well, Enion refused to make sacrifice in heaven. So he's being called back. Ooh, Ogun had to rub his hands and, you know, say he had to wash his hands and mad and say, I'm sorry, Enion, there's nothing I can do for you. Next, past the house of Shonko, the house of Obatala. One by one, past all the houses of the divinities, Uri dragged Enion until he got to the house of Orumila. And when he got to Orumila's house, Orumila came out too, and he asked Uri, Uri, why are you dragging Enya this way? Uri says, Enya refused to make sacrifice in heaven, and so the divinities have commanded that I bring him back. Orumila said, okay, wait, what exactly is the sacrifice? Uri related to Orumila the sacrifice that was necessary, and Orumila said, okay, just 1 minute, please, wait. Orumila ran back into his house, and from his own things, he gathered the sacrifice that Enion was required to make and said, you know what, let Enion remain here, and I will accompany you back to the heavens, and I will make the sacrifice on Enion's behalf. And so Uri agreed, and Orumila returned back to heaven. And there he made the sacrifice for Enion and appeased all of the divinities in heaven. He gave each one their portion for having helped and supported Enion. And the divinities, of course, were pleased. And they said, Orumila, you have done such a fantastic job. You have saved Enya and you have taken care of us. For that reason, you will now be known as Eleripi, the intermediary of fate. From now on, every year, Enya must appease Uri. And in so appeasing Uri, Uri will appease the divinities, and the divinities will give a portion of that to Orumila. Okay? And so for that reason, you know, we see the interplay, the kind of inseparable nature of us as human beings, Enya, our reliance upon Uri, and our if we refuse to comply, it will be Uri that will take us out. But it is Orumila. Even when we turn upon ourselves, even when we refuse to do what it is we've been commanded to do, it is Orumila who will intervene on our behalf and act as an intermediary so that our destiny can be made sweet. And so Uri is top, number one divinity. Nothing can be done without Uri. But even within Uri, there are requirements, there are orders, there are rules, there are things that one must do and one must not do in order to remain in compliance with what is chosen as our destiny. Can you hear me?
Yes, I so agree with that. I was engrossed in the material. Yeah, I definitely agree with that. Now, when we... Enya, what is the, is there a more direct interpretation of Enya? I noticed that word shows up in the Juba citation, and even in some of the Oriki that talk about Ori, you find the presence of that word. But is there a more, is there another way to define that word specifically, that can bring more clarity for us?
Enya, if we break it down linguistically, it is that which one chooses. Enya means that which one chooses. It is our destiny that we chose in heaven, and so Enya is epitomized visually through the arts as the nude, usually nude, pregnant mother with mm-hmm. with a child on her back sometimes,
mm-hmm.
or it could just be a woman in the kneeling position, in the birthing position. You know, traditionally women would give birth in a kneeling position, and so that is what Enya looks like. It's a kneeling, because that is when you are given birth, when you emerge into the sort of this realm, the third dimension, is at the moment of birth. And so that woman in the kneeling position with a pointed head, that pointed head represents the Uri Akpere that you had mentioned before. So you have this intersection between heaven and earth. It's most brought to life through what we use called Irofa. The Irofa is the tapper that the Babalawo will use to the tray. And it's 99%. The newer ones have all kinds of other stuff, but the traditional Irofa is a woman in a kneeling position with a pointed head. And so at that kneeling position is where birth occurs, and you touch the earth. And that's called Adayeba. Adayeba is what you find in the world. That's you're carrying your destiny, you are your destiny, but then Adayeba is what you experience and you actually find here in the third dimension. But it's always connected to that head that is always, is pointing up. Uri Akpere, in that very tip, is the head that has achieved a state of perfection. It's the head that is pointing ever toward the heavens. And so all of that is, you know, that's the visual representation of Enya. Although the woman kneeling is not called Enya, that's called Akunle-yun. Akunle-yun. But you still have the yun there. Akunle, where we kneel and choose. Akunle-yun is where we kneel and choose, and we kneel and choose at birth. And so when you receive the item, the article of Uri for your worship, there's called Ile-uri or Ibori. When you receive that, you go back into the kneeling position. The ritual gesture physically of receiving Uri is kneeling position to replicate that position that of receiving your destiny, choosing your destiny. Akunle-yun is the way it looks like. But that is the, in total, that is what Enya represents. Enya is a fourfold being of Ara, body, Okan, the heart. But the heart, Okan here, is not the emotional heart for the Yoruba concept. Okan is the thinking. It is the heart. It's not sentimentality. Let me put it that way. It's not sentimentality. We know that it is emotion that causes one to act. Okan is that thing that drives the thought, that drives us to do and to act and to change. That's Okan.
Mm-hmm.
Then you have Emi. Emi is the spirit. It's the spirit. That is what it animates you. At the time that you choose your destiny, Olodumare is the only one who can breathe the breath of life into a person. And so that's Emi, and that is the one that signifies that you are alive in the world. And then finally you have Uri. So those four overlapping circles of existence, Ara, Okan, Emi, Uri, those are that's the fourfold manifestation of Enya, all of which is exemplified, like I said, in that piece of art, ritual art of the Irofa, the tapper that the Babalawo will use to tap the tray. So that is sort of, you know, that's once there's more to say about Enya, but that's a good start.
Ashe. And we do have several callers on the line. We most certainly do appreciate your presence and invite your active participation in the conversation by way of area code 347-215-8967. When you are ready with your question, comment, or request, do press the number 1 on your telephone keypad, and we will be more than happy to assist you. All is a blessing. Ashe.
Alaro ye yogode, alaro ye yogode.
divine, all blessed. And before I get too far ahead of myself, I want to make a announcement for my New Orleans community and listeners. We will be having Orisha song classes on November 6th with Sula at King and Queen Emporium at 2500 Bayou Road at 7 p.m. She will be teaching the Orisha songs and sharing the knowledge that has been passed down to her. Classes will be $5 per person from 7 to 8:30 p.m. beginning on November 6th, and then we will have a follow-up on the 23rd. And I believe on the 20th of the following month, 3 weeks may extend into longer, depending on our schedules and participation, of course. If you are indeed interested in the New Orleans Orisha song classes, do get in contact with me, and I will provide the necessary information for you to be present. I also want to announce to those within the community, Bembe, Shango, Ogu, and Oya, on this Friday, you again will need to contact me for further information, details, locations, who will be in attendance, all that kind of stuff. And I will be more than grateful to assist you in moving forward. As always, I am truly honored and grateful for Obafemi Ogunwa's continued participation here on IFA Wednesdays and his dedication to sharing and teaching the Orisha life skills necessary to move us all forward along our individual and collective spiritual paths. I'm truly always honored and grateful by your attendance, Baba. Baba, are you with me?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I'm just going to say I want to allow you the opportunity to continue.
Thank you so much. It's Ori is you know, one of the dimensions or principles of the Orisha lifestyle that first captured my attention most strongly, and as is, you know, evidenced even later on as I made the first phase of my own initiation, which was my name, you know, restoring my name, Oribunwa, is the name that was expressed through the divination for me, and we always pray that your name will work on you, that your name will influence your destiny and will conjure your true spirit. And so Ori has all essentially been a part of my journey and my quest from the beginning. And I agree that it's a principle that really requires a lot more attention and understanding than it's something that we're not really developing and exploring as fully as it requires. And the reason why it is so important, the value of understanding Ori, is that it ties us directly into our blessing as creators. We are creation, and the extent to which we tap into that capacity as creators will determine our happiness, our fulfillment in life. And there's a lot of attention and excitement about Orisha, and rightfully so, as that first, you know, story illustrates. The Orishas are helping us on the heavenly and the earthly realm, and so they are deserving of our homage and our respect because of all the support that they give to us, both within our own constitution and in the natural environment that we live. You know, the rivers and our bloodstream and the mountains and our body and on and on. You know, we absolutely need the Orisha to manifest in a positive way. But Orisha is supporting Ori. Orisha is supporting Ori. Orisha is helping Ori to bring about that, you know, each of our particular missions and our purpose for being here. And when we bypass Ori and we just, you know, are calling on Shango and just calling on Oya and just calling on Yemaja, we're, you know, I see a lot of people are frustrated because they're expecting things that are just outside of the rules and the parameters of life. You've got to be going in a direction for Shango to open the way for you. You know,
you're also suggesting that to some degree we are abdicating our responsibility over dependence or imbalanced dependence on Orisha and not giving true credit and taking credit and responsibility in terms of Ori.
Yes. Yes. And accepting the blessing and the natural dimension of who we are. You know, there's on a certain level we could look at it as self-acceptance. You know, on the most superficial level, that, you know, I look the way I look and I talk the way I talk, etc. But on the deepest level, that I have a purpose, and my purpose is unique and it's special and it's totally necessary. And certain things I need to, you know, just accept that this is who I am. This is what I'm going to bring to the table. Every single time, it's inevitable. I am who I am. You know, there's a dimension of, there's a sort of an inner dimension of Ori that is, we could say that's mutable, it's changeable, it's flexible, and then there are other dimensions of Ori that are not flexible and they're not changeable, and they're always going to be what they are. And, you know, once we embrace that and we accept that, you know, there's some parts of me that are always going to be this way, you know, it gives us power. Ultimately, it gives us power. It gives us the power to choose very, very, in a very focused and deliberate way and to let go of some of the fanciful ideas about what's possible and what's, you know, what I want to do this and I want to do that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It makes life easier.
And we tend to waste a great deal of time, resources, trying to build things that are not within our destiny, that are not within our call, if you will.
Yes.
Excuse me. I often use that analogy in describing what we are and what we do in Congo Square. Because everyone indeed brings their own very specific individual thing to Congo Square. It's not as disorganized as it appears, but at the same time, it's not as pre-planned as it might appear. Everyone sort of knows their role and does that. You tend to fall into less complications when you focus on your job. You know, when you start trying to do everybody else's job, your job goes neglected, and then your responsibilities are neglected. So I think that's a crucial message there that you're giving right now about not only taking control, and control is such a strong word in the English language, but taking control and taking responsibility for our path and the development of destiny. It's not going to just sort of fall on you, you know, like a house in the Wizard of Oz. I mean, it's something that we have to be prepared for, but also be actively walking in on some spiritual level.
Yes.
The Bible, I think, has a story about the bridesmaids of Christ preparing their oil lamps and being prepared for the groom, for the bridegroom, as a metaphor, as an analogy, if you will, about our ever-present responsibility and work involved in spirit for ourselves and our, the world that we inhabit, but also that there's still that element of the not knowing that we have to be prepared for. Am I making sense?
I think so.
You can't wait for the disaster and then think, you know, I'll try and get prepared after the event has taken place.
Yes. I have a mentor who always tells me that, you know, a big mistake that we make is that you know, we're using the Orisha lifestyle as compensation. You know, we're kind of operating out of this deficit model, this reactionary model, and it forces us to be always trying to compensate, as opposed to getting all of our ducks in a row, gathering all the materials that we need, mapping out a blueprint, you know, and setting out a course and a direction, and then asking the divine to give us the guidance on how to make that manifest or not. You know, are we on the right track? Is what I have laid out going to work? Is this a good thing? And, you know, and that's the time to go to Orisha to crown our efforts. And we're so many people are at waiting for Orisha or even Ifa to give us a destiny. And we already, you know, as that story of Ifa I told in the beginning lets us know, we chose a destiny. We chose a destiny. It's already there. If by virtue of you being here, you have a destiny. You know, by being any, you have a purpose. You have some specific, unique, divinely ordained reason for being here. And, you know, it's just a question of, am I on the right track with manifesting that? You know, there's one verse of Ifa that, and for people who are really interested in knowing more of what Ifa says about things like Ori and these specific kinds of topics that we've been bringing out, the IITI, Ifa International Training Institute, is a magnificent resource. There's a whole series of modules that just address Ori, and so I'm going to draw heavily from those right now. And there's one verse that tells us that one by one do we pound the mortar, and twos do we pound camwood. This was Ifa's declaration for if the one whose name was, if you have any grievance, refer it to your Ori. It does not concern the Egbungun or ancestors. Neither is it the concern of Orisha. It is my Ori that all complaints must be referred to. It's okay. Ori. And Ori is beyond our thinking mind. Ori is beyond our plans. Ori is beyond the rational, you know, logical thing. It's not the mind. Ori is our destiny. It's our providence. It's that. It's the content of our existence, the container of everything that we can be. If it's not working, you got to go back to your Ori, and then when you ask for Ori, you consult Ifa. Ifa will give you the message. You meditate, and your inner spirit will give you the message. When you get it, then it becomes, now we're accountable for what it is that we know, and we have to act accordingly. But again, that, you know, kind of letting go of our responsibility and putting it always in the hands of something that we perceive to be outside of ourselves, the divinities, the ancestors, or whatever the case may be, other people, the enemies. You know, how many times does a person come and say, my enemies are attacking me, my enemies are undoing me, my enemies are blocking my way? And no, your enemies really are just testing you. They're being sent for you to start exercising what you already have, for you to start tapping into your inner power, your inner wisdom, so that you can, you know what you're made of and say, oh, you know what? I keep falling for the same tricks. How many times am I going to fall for the same okey-doke? One time, two times, 10 times? I mean, at which point do I have to say, okay, I'm going to do something differently from what I did the last 12 times and got the 12 same outcomes? You know, that's going into, you know, the inner repository of wisdom to adjust on the inside so that your outer world can be more what you want it to be.
Mm-hmm. That's the yardstick that my godmother refers to, the Ori Inu. The character. Mm-hmm. Character, I think, is a strong component to how that manifests for the individual. And I believe,
absolutely,
according to the tradition, we come here with character. We also come with Ori, but we come with character. And if that individual's,
yes,
character is not good, his or her choice of destiny may not necessarily be fulfilled. In fact, when you gave your when you read your story there, it brought to mind a story I was going to read, which goes: a pestle performs three functions. It pounds yam, it pounds indigo, it can be used as a bar lock behind the door.
Mm-hmm.
Divination for Ori Siku, Ori Ilemeri, and Afuwape when they were going to choose their destinies in Ajala Mopin's domain. They were asked to,
yes,
perform rituals. Only Ofuwape performed their rituals and therefore became very successful. The others lamented that had they known where Afuwape chose his own Ori, they would have gone there for their own Ori too. And Afuwape responded that even though their Ori were chosen in the same place, their destinies differ. And for me, that story is about character, about how we go about our performance, our sacrifice, our ritual, our activities in our daily lives, our education, how much energy and clear, conscious thought we put into character. And for me, character is how we do things, how we take things in, and then that becomes a reflection of who we are. You know, someone with good character versus someone with bad character can both mop the floor, but your character is going to show through in terms of your attitude about having to mop the floor, the amount of attention you're going to pay to the details involved in mopping the floor, you know, and so on. So for me, that yardstick, as Mama Yeye says, is about character, really. And we bring that to the table even before we come to you, even before we go to the Babalawa and put in our request, you know, and present our, you know, present situation and seek an answer for it. And often, I know for me, it's a vibration that I can feel sometimes just in the first seconds of how I hear the voice or the first few moments of my reading the request. It's something embedded in how we ask and what we ask for and our energy behind it that I think points right back to character. Even when we look at relationships, and I know you as well as I probably get a lot of requests about that. And it's funny to me how, you know, the last place that often we look at in the equation is ourselves. It's the other person,
yeah,
it's the other people involved, you know, it's the family, it's the friends, it's all the interlopers and interferers. But we take no responsibility for they're even being present. They're even being a part of the equation. And our role that we play walking up to that, because nothing, very few things happen instantaneously or overnight. It usually is a process to get to the realization that, okay, I might have a problem and I might need to seek Obafemi out for some help or seek, you know, some other spiritual leader out, a practitioner out for some help. But without that good character being there, we tend to not want to look at our responsibility, our role, you know, our place in whatever the given scenario is.
Yes, those are what you're describing is what we call the three assurances, which is Uri, character, and destiny. And those three will always support a person in achieving great things. You know, again, there's looking at what Ifa says is, you know, it's one's Uri, one's character, and one's destiny that will assist one in living in one's home. This is the story of the bride who was, you know, on her way to become, the fiance who was on her way to becoming a bride. And Ifa told her, okay, before you go, you need to know that, you know, your beauty isn't enough. You've got to take your character. You've got to take some discipline and some established positive behavior that's going to carry you into the future in this relationship. And that's, you know, directly related to what you were mentioning to in the verse before about Ordi Seku, Ordi Limite, and Afuakwe. You know, it's a great story because the three of them had made a deal. They were going to take this adventure to the world, and they made a deal that no matter what happened, they would not stop. Even if they heard their father's voices calling out to them, they would continue on the journey to the gateway of heaven. And the first two, when they heard their fathers working, they listened to their friends and, you know, who persuaded them to continue on and not to stop. But Afuakwe, when he heard his father chanting Ifa with the other Babalawos, Afuakwe couldn't, you know, do it. He said, I got to break my deal with you guys, and I'm going to go and check in with my father. And sure enough, the Awos said, well, you know, Oromila, your son is going to take this journey, and he needs to make a sacrifice. As a matter of fact, you need to sacrifice for him. And so Oromila brought forward the sacrifice, which was money and salt, and Afuakwe carried those on. And then the character of Afuakwe was demonstrated when he got to the edge of the forest after his friends had left him behind, and he saw the gatekeeper and of the forest, and he was there seasoning his food with ash. And Afuakwe took some of the salt and put it into his food, and the food was so tasty that, you know, the gatekeeper thanked him. And then Afuakwe said, okay, here, if you like it, you take this bag of salt. It's for you. And then in return, now the gatekeeper directed Afuakwe a shortcut through the forest. He said, where are you going? I'm going to see Ajalamokpi. Ajalamokpi is a dimension of Obatala, who is the one who sculpts destinies. And so he sent him on the shortcut, and he went directly there. And when Afuakwe got to the house of Ajalamokpi, he found two creditors out there demanding that Ajala come out. And when Afuakwe listened to them for a little while, you know, demanding, he said, well, why are you all looking for Afuakwe? Are you here to choose your destiny? He said, no, we're not here choosing destiny. We're here because we want our money. You know, Afuakwe owes us some money. When Afuakwe asked how much it was, they told him it was exactly, you know, the money that he had. So he divided the money. He gave one to one creditor and gave one to the other creditor, and hey, you know, that's okay. You guys can take this. And when they left, Afuakwe was really impressed. He says, did you just pay my debt for me? And he said, yeah, I did. He says, man, that was such a generous act you did. Come in, are you looking for a destiny? He said, yeah, I'm looking for my destiny. And so he said, okay, you know, let me take you through. Now, here's the key. The first two, Ordi Lemerde and Ordi Seku, they chose destinies. They chose Uri. One Uri was big, demonstrative, you know, it was really like, wow. The other Uri was very fine and beautiful. So they chose those. Afuakwe was choosing, looking, and Ajala said, okay, here, take this iron rod and hit any one of these sculptures of Uri. He hit one big one, and crushed in the dust. He took the iron rod, he hit another one that was extremely beautiful. It just shattered into numerous pieces, and another and another. See, this, these in the front room, these are all worthless. Let me take you to the back room. They went into the back room, and they found all these sculptures of Uri that were pretty bland, pretty ordinary, all pretty uniform, nothing special about them. He took the iron rod, hit one. He did it, and it king, rang out, but it didn't break. So he tried another one, king, it rang out, didn't break. So you pick any one of these Uri, and you'll be successful. And so Afuapa picked one. And then he got to the gateway of heaven at the exact same time that his friends had gotten there. So even though they had, you know, gone in haste, and they didn't consult, and they didn't have any, you know, rule to follow, Afuapa still managed to get there at the same time that they got there because of his demonstration of character, because of his generosity. And so they arrived in the world, but before they even got there, one had, you know, the rain had fallen between heaven and earth, and the big head got saturated, and, you know, big giant clumps of the head fell off. And it was damaged when he got to the earth. And the beautiful one, when he got there, he kind of hit the ground and the head cracked and it was damaged. And so they spent large portions of their lives patching up the damage that was done because of the heads that they had chosen. Whereas Afuapa, everything that he did, see, they were compensating, like, the, you know, as my mentor was mentioning, they had to use Orisha lifestyle to compensate for the deficiency. But Afuapa, every sacrifice that he made, because he still continued to sacrifice, it was surplus. It was an add. It was a value that was increased of his own destiny. And so that Ifa also tells us that part of our character, the demonstration of our character, is our adherence to the ritual discipline, you know, by going there and consulting Ifa on the other side, and then using our inner sense, our conscience, to guide us in the wise decision making, that is how we win favor on both sides of the equation, both in the heavenly and the earthly realm. So it's those three assurances of Uri, destiny, and character will never fail us for those reasons.
And that's pretty deep, because I hear what you say and I listen, but then I also hear what is being said that's not coming out of your mouth. And something I heard there was about creativity. And I want to ask you, what role does creativity play in terms of how we exercise, work out, operate within, heal with, generate energy within the realm of Uri? I know for me right now, as you heard me mention in the last week or so, I'm working on two costumes now for Mardi Gras. And for me, it's a very, and for most people who are in the tradition, it's a very ritualized spiritual process. I mean, just hours of beating, you sort of go into a trance state, or you start singing songs, or you got Orisha music going on in the background, or jazz or some other music going on in the background. And I noticed that Marcus Akinlana, another practitioner of Ifa here in the city who's also an artist, I see him also go into sort of a other world, a trance-like place. Another example, when I write, and I don't mean type at the computer. I mean write with a pen, a pencil on a piece of paper. Particularly when I'm writing about spiritual things, I begin to see indigo lights, particularly around my thumbs and my fingers. And I started seeing this at a very young age. So over the years, I've learned to associate it with the presence of spirit, and what I refer to as creative spirit. I think God, spirit, Odomare manifests in various ways. So our Uri would also And I don't think it's just enough to possess destiny, to know destiny. And the story you just shared reinforced that. We have to act on it. We have to create it. We have to build on it. And that's separate from regular, everyday, mundane activities. That's separate from cleaning house, fixing your car. It's something about artistry, painting, when I play the piano, when I drum, when I play the bell. There are certain scenarios I can get into here in the temple and in my life and in my ministry and in my finances where I can't pray, I can't meditate. I just sit and produce rhythms. And there's something different there. So I want your opinion, but also your understanding about that creative. And I'm trying to find another word other than creative. That there's something there that's directly connected to the power of God, the power of spirit, that ties it to our minds, to our consciousness. But it has to come out in a very artistic, creative way. Even the building of our shrines and our altars, there's something artistic also going on there. I can walk past a shrine and something can just be an inch off and it offends my spirit and I have to move it. It has something to do with balance. Feng shui, I believe, has tapped whatever that is that I'm trying to find language for. What's your opinion on that, Baba?
I think on one end, again, rooted in the presence of Obadala as the senior divinity. Obadala is the oldest of them all, and Obadala's function is artistry. Obadala's, his greatest works of art are us. He sculpts us in embryo. And Obadala is the one who brought Iwa existence, because Iwa is character, but Iwa is also on a deeper metaphysical level, Iwa is existence. Obadala is the one who brought Iwa from heaven to earth and molded it and shaped it and formed it into everything that we know that a human being can be. And so one proverb or saying that kind of epitomizes that is Iwalewa, Iwalewa, that Iwa, character or existence, determines beauty. Ewa is beauty. Iwa is character or existence. Iwalewa tells us that is the essence of something that defines as beauty. And Obadala is the one who is the carrier and the bringer of that. And so artistry is Obadala's prerogative, but he passes that on to people. We are all, as much as we are products of Obadala's artistry, we are continuers of Obadala's artistry. We are creators. We are all artists in our own right, in our lives. My mother used to always tell me that to make a monument of your life through your relationships and your doings. So it's making that balance that you talk about is, what we call, the right and the left. It's the balancing of the right and the left. It's a harmonization between the inner and the outer, between the masculine and the feminine, the seen and the unseen. It's always striking that balance and that harmony with ourselves and the world around us that constitutes art. That's how we know something is artful is through the balance or the strategic imbalance or the strategic disharmony between colors and shapes that something inside of us is invoked, and we are, constantly in that seat of reacting or reenacting is a better word, recreating the patterns of creation through everything that we think, say, and do.
It sounds like it's the activating force, really, behind successful life, true life itself. I'm a people watcher. I watch people and how people think and how people live, and it's meditative, but it's a science and it's a learning thing for me. And I try and sometimes think about, you know, extreme concepts. Now, and one of those that I've been thinking about lately is what separates the successful person from the not-so-successful person. And I know success is relative, how we define success is relative. I'm not really focused on that. But what separates the person who only sees successes in their life, only sees the positive things happening in their life, only sees things that are moving towards the good, and we see this a lot on Facebook, we see this a lot on Twitter, versus the person who only sees the blocks, never sees the blessings, never sees anything good happening, you know, it's all downhill, in spite of the fact that I'm probably, you know, on the internet that I have to pay a bill for, I'm probably drinking, you know, a $2 cup of coffee, I'm probably reading a dollar newspaper, you know, all these things. But yet they're on Facebook or on MySpace or on Twitter talking about, you know, nothing but negative. So, again, I go back to those glowing lights. And as you were talking, I saw Reiki in my mind, in my third eye. I saw creative people, musicians, artists, dancers, writers, and I was looking in my third eye at their hands. And they were moving energy. They were co-creating. And I think that's different from sitting on your stoop with your neighbors talking about, you know, what you would do if you hit the lottery and where you would go and what you would buy. But you're not moving any creative energy around. We're not doing anything to actively reach into the spirit realms and bring that energy into our realm of awareness, which is what I think artists do. And we know that there are all types of artists. What separates, you know, someone who cooks every day for their family from someone who looks at cooking as an artistry? And you know it when it hits the table. You smell it. You see it in the colors. You see it in the presentation. There's some care and some responsibility and some moving around of energy there, some manipulation of energy there to bring things into balance, not against spirit or against destiny, but like what feng shui seeks to do to bring things into alignment with spirit, with chi, with ashe. Yes. Does that make sense to you guys?
Absolutely.
No, I think
it shows. I think in one of the shows, maybe two or three back, we were talking about the concept of inu, which is inside. And for an artist, you know, there's to be a good artist, the masters will look for the inu. So they'll be looking for the eti inu, the inner ear. Does this person have the inner ear? If I tell him half the proverb, will the other half of the proverb unfold from within inside of himself or inside of her? That's the eti inu. The ochu inu, if I give you this much of the line, if I start this much of the movement, will your inner eye complete the movement? Your ori, the outer head, the skull, the ori ode, that's just a case. For the orinu, if your outer head is exposed to these things, if you're seeing and experiencing these dimensions of the world, will your inner head complete the sentences, so to speak? Will your inner head complete the vision of what the world is most desperately calling out for? And it's the inner world that's more important than the outer world. You know, this Joseph Campbell calls it the inner reaches of outer space. The inner reaches of outer space, the cosmos that we know through, you know, telescopes and space shuttles and satellites, all of that we know has already been charted in our inner space, within ourselves. I like when you say understanding, you know, that's ori'inu. And that's the place from which everything comes and manifests. When we look around us, everything out here is created. Everything you see has been created. And it's been created from an unseen place within ourselves, except for those things which we cannot create: plants, animals, insects, ecosystems, watersheds, rainbows. We can't create those things. That comes from the Inu of Olodumare. And so we have a little tiny piece of Olodumare, and we can create based on that, which has been passed down through Obatala. But the big Inu is only Olodumare's prerogative. But the further we can go within ourselves, the more we can align ourselves with the cosmos, which is the Inu, or the inner world of Olodumare. It's a fascinating intersection. I thank you for making that kind of a connection.
As I said, it came natural to me even as a child. There were certain connections that I almost instantaneously made as I walked through life between art, creativity, the movement of energy. Another example of that for me is cycling. I love to ride mountain bike long distances, and there's some place that I go into when I do that is very spiritual, very transitional from one plane of awareness to another. There's a rhythm present there. But again, I think that the key to it is being an active part of moving that energy around. When we look at Tai Chi, is a good example. You know, 80, 90-year-old Asians, you know, doing Tai Chi, and in our westernized thinking, you know, we think, you know, that doesn't look very athletic, it doesn't look very, you know, poetic in terms of dance. You know, what's the point? And the point is the active movement of energy. I think that's the most simplest way to describe what Tai Chi is really about. Not just sitting and waiting for life to sort of happen, getting into the flow of life itself and then being a part of the move and the direction. When we look at a flock of birds, you know, there's a unified movement there that's amazing to me. I think it's amazing to science. I don't even think science has fully been able to explain what is happening there. Why aren't they running into each other? Why are their rhythms and their patterns, even the sudden ones, you know, when you make that sudden noise and they all dart off in another direction, you know, breaking their flow, but yet they're still in flow. They're still in rhythm. They're still in harmony, if you will. And I think that's something that we have to be an active participant. We get comments, I get comments about, you know, the shrines, the altars, the food sacrifices for the Egungs. And some people are truly puzzled by that, you know, and they try to rationalize it, make logic of it. You know, well, it's produce and it's going to break down, and do the Egungs physically eat, and, you know, what's really going on there? And they cannot see beyond the veils, no pun intended, to truly understand spirit and the flow and the movement that we have with spirit. There was a point in doing my show where every morning I talked about spirit being more important than
our physical earth plane reality. It's more real, it's more tangible, it plays a bigger role in how we experience life. We just have not been taught that. And we've been
right.
taught to sort of externalize our reality. When you were talking there, I was hearing science. You know, when you were
yes.
talking about how the inner consciousness sort of pieces things together, that's based in science. You know, what our eyes physically see is not complete. You know, it's broken up. It's segmented. It's inverted even. It's upside down. And then our minds, our consciousness, our spirit, our awareness, our experience, all those things that make up consciousness fill in the blanks. And that's what gives us the totality of the pictures that we think that we are seeing, that we are visualizing with our physical eyes.
Yes.
All the color is not there. We sort of fill in some of that color based on our expectation of what should be there. Every now and
yes.
then someone will send around one of those, you know, cute little posts on Facebook where all the letters are mixed up, but only the first and last letter of every word will be in place, you know, and
yes.
your mind is able to piece together what is being said there, even though the
yes.
spelling and the grammar is completely out of whack, you know, and that's the
right.
reality of our everyday lives and our everyday existence. So I'm often concerned, for lack of better words, when I hear people speak a negative truth, a negative affirmation
yes.
into existence, and then reaffirm that based on their so-called experience, if you will. Not understanding
yes.
that just your interpretation of the experience can change the whole thing in its entirety, you know?
Yes.
I cold for you and I, but, you know, when we see the sadhus in India, you know, walk across the hot cold, you know, for them, it's a walk in the park, you know?
Yes.
It's because they have changed their perception of what's going on physically. Because the reality is what's going on internally.
Ashe.
If you will, we'll take just a brief intermission, then we'll come back. Again, we have several people on the phone line. We do invite you to press number one and become a part of the conversation. We most certainly do appreciate each and every one of you here on IFA Wednesdays. We will be forward. All is a blessing. Ashe.
Oguye,
are,
ogunde, are, ogunde,
awaniye,
ogunde, are, ogunde,
awaniye.
Arere, awani leo, ogu maribu, maribu yeyeye, ogu arere o kalawede, ogu susulona, ogu mbokumboku, bobo ara un torasiese abalo ogu mele solo kumare, ogu rele kumese ogu, Ana María Mendoza, ukañengo Milana, ogu toyengo y Fredo Jaramillo, Padre mío celestial libre nos di cubano araye, tiya tiya eleno funfun. Aina, Bobosón Bunlo. Pa' que nos dé ireo, mo ireo, ma ire de guanto loco, salud, tranquilidad, paz, desenvolvimiento. Padre mío, todas las cosas que usted tenga en el plano de esta arapa, este subo, mo, hecho panibu. Y vos, y boro, caleno, denle la bendición pa' que usted con su mando cubre que todas las cosas malas que hay en el plano de esta tierra, que nadie se pueda librar, usted se lo quite.
Aguanta,
macheta, la cura, la bendición de mi marino, papi, batá.
Awani,
Awani,
Not just the product,
but the care and the artistry and the time that goes into the product. And for me, that's where spirit exists. That's where it is. It's right there with us in everything that we do, but we can choose to acknowledge it or not acknowledge it, to recognize it and to embrace it and bring it into the process, or to sort of do things, you know, without any feeling, without any connection to the energetic presence in whatever it is that we are doing at any given time.
Absolutely. I think that's why the significance of lifestyle is so important to the Orisha, for us as practitioners or carriers on of Orisha essence. The lifestyle is everything, because when we reclaim it as a lifestyle, then the idea of the artist as a separate person who, you know, like you mentioned, is a celebrity or is somewhere in a museum, all that whole concept gets wiped away. Because in the, real quick, you know, Yoruba sociology, you have the Agboile. The Agboile is your family lineage. And so let's say, you know, in your family lineage, y'all are weavers. Well, you're going to be weavers because somewhere in the line, Obalufon, or Orisha Obalufon, is the progenitor of your lineage. And Obalufon passed on weaving to your family line. And so the shrine to Obalufon is the loom. So you're not just a weaver, but you're a custodian of the mysteries of that divinity. And somewhere throughout the process of weaving, you're going to pay homage to the divinity that gave you this skill. You know, and so it isn't separated from your, you know, the divinity, the work, the money you earn, the way you take care of your family. It's all woven into one expression. It's part of your lifestyle. You know, the market, people who take things and sell, those are people who belong, you know, there's a sacred dimension to selling and marketing. There's a sacred dimension to farming. There's a sacred dimension to everything that we do when we are in the lifestyle mode, not just in the religious mode. And this isn't for everybody, of course, but for the people who are open and receptive to the fullness of what Orisha is, the lifestyle aspect of it will open up more and more and more gateways to experiencing what Orisha can be. You know, it's not an isolated thing that takes you out of society. It's a full, all-encompassing thing that allows you to bring more into the society.
And as you've said in previous shows, that includes an economy. I think a big conflict that many people have that come to me, particularly in regards to Orisha lifestyle or voodoo lifestyle, is how to do that, and they're still trying to maintain their connection, let's say, to their place of employment or to the rest of their family who's not living Orisha lifestyle, who doesn't understand Orisha lifestyle. We almost become segmented. I think, in our demonstration, we're one way at work, and then we're another way with our family, and then we're another way in terms of our public space in the community. And, you know, my next statement is going to sound prejudiced, but one of the things that I love about New Orleans is not only is that African concept of lifestyle present here, and what I mean is that there are people who are in Orisha lifestyle, who are at the Bembes, who are at the Misas, who are at the Yoruba language courses, but they're also vendors. They're also shea butter distributors. One person has drums and bells. Another person has the white cloth. The other person has, you know, other textiles and fabrics. Someone else has cowrie shells, and you go into the community to access these things, and it's truly a lifestyle. Where we eat when we leave Congo Square. You know, the
yes.
owners and operators and employees of that restaurant are all involved in Orisha lifestyle. So,
yes.
Yeah, it Christianity, Islam, Western-based culture has traditionally taught us separation. You know,
yeah.
that there's one place for this and then there's another place for that, and they never mix. Whereas I believe within Orisha lifestyle, if you're truly doing it authentically, I don't think that's possible to bring about that level of separation. Everything,
no,
everything, you know, as they say, everything is a part of honoring the tradition and the practice and the lifestyle of Orisha worship and Ifa.
Yes. No separation. No separation. All that idea of is imposed. And the key, I think, is to realize that idea of separation works for the Western mind. The separation, you know, I'll tell you one experience I had. This is not, you know, separation idea, but just the concept of how all-pervasive culture is. I was coming from Nigeria. Everyone is black. Everyone is in Yorubaland in particular, everyone is wearing traditional clothes. And I get off the plane in the airport in Amsterdam, and I'm looking at everyone is white and everyone is wearing, you know, what I consider Western clothes, and I'm thinking, man, what a tragedy! These people have lost their tradition. Everyone is so, you know, separated from their past, and it's just like all modern, modern, modern. But then as I was sitting there, and I'm thinking, I'm in Amsterdam, and something in my eye, like you were saying about those visual things that people send on Facebook, something in my eye made me just sort of go back in time and pretend or imagine, envision that this was the 17th century. And I started to see, like, well, these clothes that they're wearing have more in common with 17th century European fashion than they have to do with African fashion. So let me see. Yeah, if the cuff was a little bigger and the collar was a little longer and the pants were a little more flowing, and instead of wearing that, he was wearing some suspenders, and if the coat was, this is all just an adaptation. You know, we're just seeing a continuation of Western culture. All of the clothes that we wear, the jeans and button-up shirt and all, that's just a continuation. They're fully in their culture is what I'm saying. When you walk the streets of New York or Amsterdam or Madrid, those people are seeing their modern tradition in motion. It is only we who have been convinced that that is just universal. That's just mainstream. That's neutral culture. When we do it, it's ethnic. But when they do it, you know, it's just that's just fashion. That's not just fashion. That's Western fashion. That's a reflection.
But why do we think, and particularly here in Chicago, in New York, in L.A., in Florida, that why do we think that we can do that? You know, wear what everybody else is wearing, look how everybody else is looking, you know, pretty much from the visual, live the way everyone else is living, but yet we
right.
still say, oh, but I'm Ifa, I'm Voodoo, I'm Christian,
yeah.
I'm
yeah.
Muslim. And again, reinforce that for some separation, for others, confusion. From the perspective of the young people, they should be completely confused. And their behavior
yes.
demonstrates a level of that. Because we're saying,
yes.
you know, oh, well, what you wear doesn't matter. But now we're seeing church folks with sagging pants, middle-class
right.
educated folks with, you know, attire that once upon a time would have been, you know, segmented to one community or to one genre of behavior. Now you don't
right.
know who is what. Because anyone can put on any costume, and the political correct language is, well, I can do whatever I want and still claim to be
whatever you want in the blank and still claim to be American, still claim to be black, still claim to be white, still claim to be Ifa, still claim to be religious, still claim to be spiritual, but I don't have to demonstrate that anywhere consistently for that to be true. That's the belief system of the day. And for me, you know, I like lifestyle. I love your whole concept of Orisha lifestyle. And I want to make it clear to listening audiences, Orisha lifestyle is Baba's project. He created this concept of Orisha lifestyles. We're not just using the two words together randomly. This is his baby, if you will. But I like that whole concept because it's everything that we do, how we eat. You know, you want to deal with your weight, you want to deal with your health, you can go into a recent lifestyle. You can look at what you're eating. You can look at the spirit forces that you're working with. You can look at your Odu. You know, there are things that you can look at, and there's a formula there that you can utilize to bring balance and to bring the result that you're seeking. But our culture reinforces the lie. It reinforces costumes. It reinforces looking like one thing, but then professing to be something else out of your mouth, you know, not judging a book by its cover, which has some issues. I have some issues with that. You know, I can be all tattooed over. You know, I can have spikes coming out of my chin, you know, but how dare you be offended, you know, in any way if I just might be a little bit scary to you. I mean, that doesn't make any sense to me, you know.
Yeah,
you have
natural
responses, you know, to energy, and we've lost touch with energetic communication, energetic language, energetic experience.
Yeah.
We even have more people online, Baba, but no one's pressing number one to raise their hands. We have double the people now than we had an hour ago.
maybe we just stop talking.
Maybe we just had 15 minutes of silence, somebody might press the number one. Okay, we have a California caller.
That's right.
Eric Code 501, who has now raised their hand. Divine peace and blessings.
Hi.
Go ahead, beloved.
And I just, you know, I've been listening, and I agree with what y'all are saying about, you know, putting on costumes and you know, being able to be whatever you want to be, but then not feeling like, you know, you are, I mean, you can change and be whatever you want to be, basically, because I have family and friends who get dressed and, you know, go out and, you know, to the club and they want to, you know, wear, you know, certain attire. But when guys come at them, you know, a certain way, then they want to say, you know, you can't talk to me like this, but, you know, your attire says that I can talk to you like this. And, you know, just living, I guess, authentically. And I'm learning that, you know, on a daily basis, you know, how to do it. You know, and still be in a respectable and a happy, you know, lifestyle.
Yeah, I'm hearing. Thank you for that comment. I'm hearing consistency and authenticity. You know, as words on the inside. If I'm being authentic and true to myself, then well, what I think, feel, say, and do will be consistent with that my authentic self. And then to the extent that I can do that, then the world around me will also be consistent with who I am and how I'm presenting myself in the world. And it's a gradual process. I think that when I look at the extent to which what we live in the West and how they've, you know, really permeated the entire culture with Western philosophical ideas, well, you know, we have to create that space incrementally for ourselves, too, wherein we have rules and laws and, most importantly, an economy. You know, the another dimension of Orisha lifestyle, or the under the foundation of Orisha lifestyles, is Orisha economics. Because within the economic framework, you have the engines that drive culture. And this is something that the Oba and Oyotunji was very, very, very adamant about, and I hope that we'll see more and more people around the country and around the world pick up the ball on this. Economics drive culture. If you're a farmer, if you live in a farm economy, you're going to have a farm culture, and it's going to just stand to reason. You're going to wear farmer clothes and, you know, eat farmer food and celebrate farmer holidays, and you're going to develop farmer values. If you live in an artistic culture and an industrial culture and a you know, on and on, whatever kind of economies you live in, those are going to drive the culture that you live in. So for us, who understand the real potency and the importance of spirituality, or and particularly Orisha spirituality, we have to, in this stage, where we have, and specifically in the United States of America, where we have so much money. I love what you were saying, Divine Prince, earlier about the fact that I spent $5 on coffee, I got an internet bill, I mean, you know, I'm paying an internet bill, I probably am using an iPad, and I drive a $20,000 car, but I'm complaining about blah, 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 but it's because my life doesn't have the meaning that I know that it's supposed to have, and because I'm working for somebody who I don't really know who owns the company. I don't really know what we do. I don't really know where the proceeds of this company go to. I don't, you know what I mean? This isn't necessarily consistent with my values, and I don't even have the means to check or double check what it is that I'm saying I'm doing. So my values are compromised by virtue of the fact that I live in this economy that I have no control over, but that's a choice. I can control my economy. I can influence my economy. I can participate in an economy that reinforces my values. And the extent to which I do that will allow my values to be more acceptable, embraced, and even celebrated in the people who I want to be, you know, living this lifestyle with. So the economics is super duper important. We have to drive that home. I think especially right now in this stage of the lifestyle that develops in America, if we can control the economics, oh my goodness, oh my goodness, oh my goodness, the lifestyle will pick up. We'll make more headway in a generation than we've been able to make in 200 years if we can really drive this Orisha economics home. Live together, buy together, sell together. Those just do that. Mm-hmm. Live together, buy together, sell together. Oh my goodness.
I would not be able to have the lifestyle that I have if it were not for that. And as a black man in America, I had to learn that the hard way. You know, the first change for me was my hair. And that brought a realization that, you know, even with college, even with skills, even with my level of articulation and being able to do certain things within the system, have the skills for that, my hair now was an issue. And for many people, that becomes an issue. And they either find a way to work with it. You know, some people do it by going to the beauty parlor and having their hair twisted every week, and you're spending money for that, and you're doing it so that your employer doesn't complain about your hair. But then for me, the next thing was, now I'm piercing, okay? Not one, not two, five in each ear. Now I'm gauging. Not earplugs, not earrings, earplugs. Okay?
Mm.
Now you want to wear African clothes every day. So I basically got forced out of the system, forced out of Western culture. It was made clear that I wasn't going to be accepted unless I made some adjustments, or I had to move around. And I think that message is being sent to many of us. We're either in denial of it, or we surrender to it and are in denial of it, or we find a way to deal with it and get around it. And for me, it goes directly to Orisha economics, because it is the people within this culture, within this practice, within these traditions that keep me afloat, that keep my lights from being turned off, that make sure that I have the income and the resources that I need every day or every month to move forward, much the way I would have had to do if I stayed within the system and kept a job. So for many people, it's an issue. I know within many of the houses within La Comie, they want you to wear white for a year. That's a problem for some people. You know, how am I going to work? How am I going to go to school? How am I going to do this? How am I going to do that? And again, that's another example of what Baba's talking about, where Orisha economics and Orisha lifestyle should already be in place to fill that gap. Muslims do it.
Yes.
They come here from other countries. They hire other Muslims. They house other Muslims. And they don't have to go to the welfare department. They don't have to go begging.
Thank
they don't
you.
Have to go looking for, because their
Thank
community
you.
Has already provided the necessary things that they need to live, not just so that they can live off the community, but so that they can live and continue to feed the community. It's about reciprocity. You know, sometimes we have to give. We have to share in order for our very existence to continue. And it's easier to do that within your community or within your family or within your group of people who think like you or have some level of understanding as you do. We are at the top of the hour. It is 2:00. I'm not going to ask Baba to stay on any longer than he chooses to do so. So I'm just taking the opportunity now to invite all of our listeners to continue to be a part of the Power Lunch, Hoodoo New Orleans Voodoo Secrets and Recipes, every day at noon U.S. Central Standard Time here on Blog Talk Radio. And, of course, IFA Wednesdays here with myself, Obafemi Ogunwa, Ojalola Ifasakin, and others as we continue to grow and involve with the show. We most certainly do appreciate you. Baba, I will let you have the last word or let you, you know, finish up your thoughts, and then we will take any questions from those who are already on the phone lines, because if you are not on the phone lines, your show is ending right now unless you are in archive. You are on the phone lines and you still do have a question or comment. We will give you a moment or so to still go ahead and raise your hand now, and we will come back and we will address you. Our caller from California who has already spoken, your hand is still raised, so I am going to come back to you if you have another question or comment. If you don't, just go ahead and press the number one now, and I'll know that, you know, you're all good. So, Baba, again, I appreciate you, and anything that you still would have to say, we most certainly are open to hearing that.
Well, I want to give thanks, as always, to Olodumare for empowering you and guiding you to provide this forum, because it's a phenomenal blessing and opportunity for us to continue the conversation. And I sincerely hope and pray that people are being enriched. Well, they are, because they tune in, and so I appreciate all of the listeners who raise their hand or don't and take notes. But, you know, if you don't participate in the show, you know, take the challenge. You know, I'm going to give you a challenge to go out and repeat some of these ideas within the next 24 hours. Every time you listen to the show, don't take it as static, just, you know, museum quality conversation. take these as opportunities and invitations to grow. Test these things out. If you agree or you disagree, go and try it out on people who are knowledgeable, people who you think would, you know, really have some deep and true insights into the idea that we're discussing, and try them out. Hey, what do you think about this? And then just listen. And or if you're beyond that and you think that, hey, you know what, that's exactly what I need to go to the next level in my craft, in my practice, in my devotion, in my own lifestyle, in my family, then try it. And then if it works, let us know. If it doesn't work, let us know. You know, my feelings won't be hurt if you say, you know what, I tried this and I tried this and I tried that, and none of it actually worked for me. I need to learn and grow. We need to figure out where are you, how you tried it, what you did exactly, and what happened, so that we can improve upon the science. Because this time is so special and so unique, and I guarantee you, this time will not last forever. 5 years from now, the scene will be different. 5 years from now, the players will be different. 5 years from now, the opportunities will be different.
Baba, are you still with me? Hello, Baba. Okay, callers, I don't know what has happened. We are not hearing you, Baba. I don't know what's going on. It could be very well something within the Block Talk Radio system. But if I am still being heard, I totally 100% agree with what Baba is saying right now. Particularly in terms of asking, sharing, talk about what you hear us talking about on this show. I'm surprised at the number of times people hear me say that I have my lifestyle because of Orisha Lifestyle, and no one asks me how I'm doing that. No one asks me how I'm able to do what I do and live the way I live without having to be ingrained in the system. And I am not the only one. We have many people here in New Orleans who live this lifestyle. I'm sure Baba knows many others who live this lifestyle successfully, effectively. Could we all do better? Could we all move to another level? Absolutely. But we need to come together in terms of the discussion of that, in terms of the sharing of that information and that knowledge. We need to create a depository of that information. During the Hurricane Katrina evacuation, we had our own repository of information. When people found out what was available, they brought it back to the group. When people found out, you know, that there were jobs online, that people could work from at home from their computer, and so-and-so was doing it, and it's successful, then we had 10 other people that came and did it, and it became successful. And when someone had a problem, we shared that. Look, this could be a problem. This can be a pitfall. This may or may not be for you, and this is the reasons why. So we need to share that information. We as Americans, we know about punching the clock. We know about going to college, going to trade school, getting a degree, and working the job. We do not have enough information about self-employment, about economics, about community economics, and particularly within Orisha Lifestyle. So we're here for you. Bob and I are most certainly here for you. And we want to hear your ideas. We want to hear your information, and we want to share that communally among the group of Orisha worshipers and those who are actively participating and seeking greater level of awareness and manifestation in the realm of Orisha Lifestyle. I most certainly do appreciate each and every one of you. Again, I'm not really sure what happened. Baba, your line is still open, but I cannot hear you. So I'm not even sure if you all are hearing me. But I am appreciative of your time, of your attention, and I invite each and every one of you back always at 12 noon U.S. Central Standard Time here on Block Talk Radio for the Power Lunch, and on Wednesdays for EFI Wednesdays, and on Sundays for Congo Square Preservation Society Mondays. All is truly and indeed a blessing. Ashe.
Aga yujola nyo, agayu jolanyo baba sela inya sela yo
agayu jolanyo agayu jolanyo baba sela inya sela yo
agayu jolanyo agayu jolanyo baba sela inya sela yo
agayu jolanyo agayu jolanyo. Yeah.
Abalu Bye-bye.